in exchange for Torah. And he said over something that he heard from his Rebbe, who in turn heard this from Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, who was the Rosh Yeshiva of Mir in America. Passed away a few years ago. Before this, the only thing that I ever heard from Rav Birnbaum was a story about him once visiting San Francisco on a fundraising trip together with some of the Bachrim. And since they were in San Francisco, some people wanted to wake up early and go to the Golden Gate Bridge. Apparently it's one of the wonders of the world. It's a beautiful, beautiful bridge. And they wanted to go see the Golden Gate Bridge, and Rav Shmuel said, you know, I'm just going to stay here and learn Gemara. I just want to learn, you know. And I said, but Rebbe, you can learn, you can learn anytime. Your whole life you can learn. When this might be the only time in your life you're in San Francisco, maybe this is the only time in your life you're ever going to see the Golden Gate Bridge. And they started throwing out, you know, Rav Shimshon followed Hirsch, the Swiss Alps. He's going to get up after 100 times. He's going to say, you see my Alps? And I'm going to have to say yes. So Rav Shimshon wanted to go see the Swiss Alps. They said, Rebbe, maybe this is going to be the only time you ever see the Golden Gate Bridge. And you're going to stay here, you're going to learn, you can go learn tomorrow. Today you'll go see the bridge. So Rav Shmuel said, this is the only time that I'm going to be able to learn instead of seeing the Golden Gate Bridge in my life. Hear the trash? This is the only time I'm ever going to be able to like choose learning over seeing the Golden Gate Bridge. I may not have that opportunity again, so I'm going to sit here and learn. So that's Rosh Hashiva, first of all. And that was the only thing I ever knew about Rav Shmuel Brazil, about Rav Shmuel Birnbaum, excuse me, until 2 days ago when I gave Yitzchak a ride home. And he didn't remember exactly who it was from, and I said, as payment for the ride, I would never ask, not even a half minute, that I would ask you for anything, but I'm going to give you my phone number, and if you find the source, could you please call me? And he called me today during lunch to tell me the source of his teaching from Rav Shmuel Birnbaum. Now, I'm fortunate to know two things from Rav Shmuel Birnbaum. So this is what Rav Shmuel Birnbaum said, and this is where we're living right now, and this is what the PZS is living with. The Medrash says that Yitzchak Avinu became blind.
Very nice.
Yitzchak Avinu became blind. How did he become blind? Chazal say because at the Akedah, Yitzchak was bound in chains, so to speak, and Avram was about to do the holy act of doing what was most unnatural for him. That's what all the Bali Musar say, that each of the Avos had to do something which was totally unnatural for them. Yaakov had to lie, even though he was the man of truth. Avram had to kill somebody, even though he was the man of chesed. Or think that he was going to do that. So Avram was about to do this amazing thing, and Chazal say that Hashem opened up the Rakia, and the Malachim saw Akedas Yitzchak, and started crying bitter tears, and those tears fell into Yitzchak's eyes, and Yitzchak became blind. So Shmuel Birnbaum asked the question, he said, I don't understand. Look throughout all of rabbinic literature, both the esoteric and the revealed, and you will see and you will know that the Malachi Asharis have no need for the sky to open up to know what's going on in this world. They're not physical beings. They can hear and see and do without the sky opening up. And the fact that Chazal speak of the sky opening up is muzar legamre. It's totally strange. So, Rabbi Shmuel explained that the reason Chazal speak of the Malachim seeing the Akedah with the sky open up is twinned with the second strange thing about this episode. And that is that we don't normally find Malachim crying either. Malachim are not such emotional beings. So Shmuel said that when we say that the sky opened up, what that means is a little bit the atmosphere of this earth had to penetrate the Rakia a little bit in order for the Malachim to see Akedas Yitzchak as a deep thing. If the Malachim were looking and the sky was closed and it was the Mabat of Shemayim, the way of looking in Shemayim, what Avram was doing was, there was nothing sad about it, there was nothing heroic about it, there was nothing great about it, it was just the Ratzon Hashem. There's no difference between Akedas Yitzchak and putting on tefillin in the morning. There's no difference between Akedas Yitzchak and taking a breath. They are both truth. Hashem wants Akedas Yitzchak, Hashem wants us to breathe. There's nothing heroic about it. It was only after the Rakia opened up that the Malachim could be moved to tears because they said, whoa, this is an incredible emotional, heroic feat of doing something absolutely amazing. There are many tzaddikim who left the world promising that they would go to Shemayim and storm the heavens to bring redemption, and none of them did. Because even the greatest tzaddikim who made big promises, when they would get to Shemayim, they'd say, no, everything's okay. Everything's okay down here. It looks like total chaos. The palace is burning. You're the lekes, and we're all screaming, where's the Baal Habira? Who's in charge of this palace? And all the tzaddikim are screaming and screaming and screaming, who's in charge of the palace, until they die, and they go off to Shemayim, and they say, no, actually, everything's okay. That's only okay to a certain degree. It's only, you only allow that. Yibuchina achat. The other perspective is that it's true that it's really painful down here. And Hashem wanted the malachim to see that. To see what it was like to be a human being for a second. To not have the clarity that everything's okay and everything's under control. And that one day we'll wake up and we'll say, Hayin kechom, and it was just a dream and it was a nightmare, but it wasn't real. And everything was okay all along. We were just, you know, we were asleep. And when you're a little kid and you like, you wake up and you have a nightmare, and you wake up and you're alone in your bed, that's really bad, but then you go and you crawl into your parents' bed, and if you're lucky, they let you stay. And then you go back to sleep and you can have the nightmare again, but when you wake up and you're in your parents' bed, it's okay. So when you wake up, Hayinu kecholmim, and like, you realize this whole thing was just, Batischak liyom acharon, Yitzchak avinu, Batischak liyom acharon. You can't even say those words in this world. We're going to be able to laugh at what's going on now. It's not, that's not of this world. Right now Hashem wants us to feel the pain, and He wants the Malachim to see that the fact that we just davened Maariv is... The fact that we just davened Maariv and we said Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, even though the whole world looks totally out of control, that is an act of deep heroicism. The Arizal told Reb Chaim Vital, who he had earlier told, he told Reb Chaim Vital that he was a guild of Rabbi Akiva. Reb Chaim Vital was a guild of Rabbi Akiva, who in turn was a guild of Yosef Atzadeh. And he told Reb Chaim Vital that when you put on tefillin and shemayim, it has the same roshim, it has the same effect as when Rabbi Akiva had the makom tefillin filleted off of his body with iron combs. And that was hundreds of years ago. I can only imagine what our Shema Yisrael is in a world which is so confusing and is so difficult. And it's good to embrace the pain, but it's also good to know somewhere deep, deep, deep inside that it's okay. And that Hayinu Kecholmim, I end with Rabbi Nachman. Rabbi Nachman said, and this is just, I didn't say anything for the Pizetzner, but this is what the Pizetzner was living with. Rabbi Nachman said that time is a function of Das. We experience time relative to our cognitive state. So when a person is in a low cognitive state, semi-unconscious, sleeping, you can experience what you think is this long dream with like, goes for hours and hours and days and months and years even in your head, and then you wake up and you look at your watch, it's like, oh, it's 15 minutes. Because when you're in a low state of Das, when your mind's in a low state of consciousness, time drags on and on and on. You could have two people sitting in the same shir. Rabbi Nachman doesn't say exactly this, but you have two people sitting in the same shir. For one person, it's eternity. Like, when is this going to be over? And for the other person, it just speeds through because he's on a higher state of consciousness. So Rabbi Nachman said that we don't even know what this is, but Gullus feels like it's been thousands and thousands of years, but it's just because Hayinu Kechom, because we're dreaming, we're in this like deep, 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 deep sleep. We're awake, but it's a deep, deep sleep. We're in a very low state of consciousness. As soon as we wake up, his ori, when we wake up and the Jewish people wake up, it's going to be like, we're going to look at our watches, we're going to be like, oh, it's 15 minutes since the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. It just happened. That whole long, crazy, insane nightmare was just a blink of an eye. And yet, in the meantime, we have to feel it, we have to know that it hurts, and it is the utmost cruelty in the world to pretend like it's not happening right now. The Rambam says, if there's a tzara, habala olam, and you pretend like it's not happening, you say, this is just the way the world is. Listen, there's cycles of violence, there's cycles of misfortune. That's achzarius shein kumam. That's the ultimate cruelty. We have to feel the pain of other people, we have to try to alleviate the pain of other people, we have to try to alleviate our own pain. And yet, to know for ourselves, somehow deep down inside, that despite the stira of, like, if it's okay, so, like, just let it ride out. He's actually said, the greatest thing in the world is to do someone else a favor. And that's true even though things aren't so bad for them. Even though the poor person's really okay. It's just a dream, it's a bad dream. But the deepest thing you can do is to help somebody through their bad dream, to kind of give them a little bit to get through, to help them until they could be helped. Lagamre. Like that maisa with one of the tzaddikim, I forget who. Somebody was suffering very bad, they went to the tzaddik and said, Hashem will help you. And he came out and the son said, knew what my father said? And he said, your father said that Hashem should help me. He said, and you accepted that? What's going to happen until Hashem helps you? Go back and ask him, what's going to happen until Hashem helps you? So he went back to the tzaddik, and the tzaddik said, it's a good question, but Hashem should help you until he helps you. That's where we are as a Jewish people. Hashem should help us until he helps us. He should help us to get through, until he helps us to realize that really we were just sleeping in the bed with our tati the whole time. He's right next to us. You know, we're having these night tremors, and like we're like rolling out like, no. And Hashem's like just like patting us on the head like, it's okay, Shefula, everything's okay, everything's good. So Hashem should help us until he helps us. We should be zochet to see mamish be'enei basar v'dam. We should be able to see hatov, hanigla, v'hanira. One more nigga, then I gotta go home to my family. I gotta go. My daughter's having a nightmare.
la 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 la
before we leave, just get share one story.
Thanks, Alan.
I think some of you have heard it, but it's totally worth it. So first of all, why are we commemorating the P.S. Netzer Rebbe? Of all the rebbes, a lot of great rebbes, but he wasn't just any rebbe. There was a guy who lived at the time of the P.S. Netzer Rebbe, and he saw all the gdolim of the time. He said some of them are amazing in tzedakah, some of them are amazing daveners, some of them are amazing learners. He said the P.S. Netzer Rebbe was amazing at everything. At all of them, he was the most amazing Rebbe he had ever met. And everyone who met him seems to have felt this is really something special. And it's not just that he was a Warsaw Ghetto Rebbe and he, you know, strengthened the people during the darkest time and refused to leave even though he could have saved his life, but he just didn't want to abandon his flock. It was obviously extremely inspiring. But the truth is, if you read the works of the Rebbe, they're beautiful. Even before the war, I actually find I love Derech HaMelech. Like way before the war, he had a brilliant chidushim. He was really passionate about how everyone needs a Rebbe. Every child, every young person has to have someone to guide them. And he's just like Shlomo says, that everyone has to be a prophet. No one has an excuse not to search to be a prophet, to be so holy, so pure, so sweet that Hashem should talk to him. We all have an obligation to mamash, make ourselves like the Avos. And he's just amazingly sweet Torahs. He was really ahead of his time in terms of psychology. He has a diary. He has a book which is really just a diary. It's a really, really beautiful sefer. And I've been reading this book, which is Rav Weinberger's speeches every year. He gives a yard site, drasha, in honor of the Rebbe, and there's one of them which was just really awesome, really cool. So we know that if you look in Tanakh, there's only one person who really dances. Who's the only person in all of Tanakh who we see dances? David HaMelech. David HaMelech dances. He dances like crazy. His wife doesn't like it so much, but he keeps on dancing. So the P.S. Netzer Rebbe had one of these moments in life when there was something called the Hachnasat Sefer Torah. For us, Hachnasat Sefer Torah is not so amazing, because we've been through it, we've heard these things happen a lot, we have a lot of money, thank God. It's not the craziest thing in the world. No, compared, relatively. But in the P.S. Netzer's time, to have a Simchas Hachnasat Sefer Torah was like a once-in-a-lifetime experience. They actually pulled in off the money that they could write a Sefer Torah, a crazy experience. And the P.S. Netzer Rebbe was like, he wanted to do something crazy. So what does he write in his diary? He wanted to do a somersault. He's going to do a somersault. And like the original Hasidim, he used to do somersaults. But then he thought to himself, he writes this all in his diary, how can I do a somersault? I'm a big rabbi. Everyone's going to think I'm crazy. Right? I'm going to do a somersault? Even a normal person do a somersault, you know? How can I do this? And then he said, no! It's a Yetzer Hara that's trying to hold me back. I need a way to kind of leave myself and just forget about what everyone says. I need a way for my soul to kind of separate from the body. And he convinced himself the right thing to do was to do the somersault. And he did the somersault. And it was probably really cool. I don't know. I wasn't there. They didn't have YouTube. But anyways, it just shows you that it is a very, very beautiful person who's really in touch with his soul, who really wanted to do everything necessary to be connected to Hashem. Sometimes we all feel pressured. We all feel like, I know, even with Shlomo Carlbach, said that he used to dance like nuts, like crazy, go to the Bima, and then people started talking to him about him, and he didn't do it, go as crazy. Even with Shlomo, he said he didn't, when people, it was hard for him to go as nuts as he would have liked to. But one thing that we can take this yard site from the Piyush Netzer Rebbe is that when we have that, it's actually the first halacha in the Mishnah Berurah. He says that pressure is going to say, people are going to make fun of you if you're frum, if you do this, if you do that, if I daven along to an Efsa, if I learn, if I say, oh, he's speaking Lashon Hara, I don't want to hear Lashon Hara. People are going to make fun of you. And the first halacha the Mishnah Berurah says is, that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. You're standing in the presence of Hashem. Just imagine, like, your mom is in front of Hashem, that's the only thing that matters. And that's the Torah that Piyush Netzer Rebbe lived. And of course, the most famous teaching of the Piyush Netzer Rebbe that we have to share is the Rav Shlomo story. Rav Shlomo actually, I think, is the one who really, really made the Eish Kodesh famous. Rav Shlomo was walking down the beach in Tel Aviv, and he sees this guy who looks totally beaten and disgusting, and like every part of his body had been beaten up. And Rav Shlomo looked at him with the eyes that only Rav Shlomo could see, and he says, oh, your face is shining. You're so beautiful. And this guy was cleaning the streets of Tel Aviv. And he says, Shulam Aleichem. And he says, Aleichem Shulam. And Rav Shlomo detected the accent. He says, where are you from? He says, I'm from Piyush Netzer. Piyush Netzer? Oh my God! Did you maybe learn by the Rebbe? Rav Kleinim is coming. Just saying his name is like throwing holy water on us. Like, did you ever learn a Torah by him? Like, I learned by him. I learned by him for 5 years. From age 6 to 11, I learned by the Rebbe. And then when I was 11, the Nazis thought I was so big, they thought I was 17. And they beat me. And that's why I'm so broken. But the Rebbe saved my life. And Rav Shlomo says, wow, amazing. Could you teach me one Torah? You've learned by him for 5 years. He must have taught you something. Could you please teach us a Torah? And the guy says, you think after the Holocaust I teach Torahs? I don't teach Torahs anymore. And Rav Shlomo says, no, I'm begging you, please. The Torahs of Rabbeinu go to the depth of the heart. If you taught it, if Rabbeinu Kleinim has come and taught it, you must remember something. And Shlomo was basically crying. And the holy hunchback said, okay, if you really want it, I'll do it. So he goes like a real chassid, he washes his hands, puts a kippah on his head, puts a broom down, washes his face. He says, I'll tell you, we used to dance by the Rebbe. You see, the Rebbe, he took all of the children and whose parents and mothers had been taken away. He wasn't just a rabbi, he was their mother, he was their father, and he took them in. And he and they would do Kabbalat Shabbat together, and it was like all the little kids dancing and singing together with the Rebbe in the middle. And it was like, you'll never see such a thing till Mashiach came. And then they got to the meal, and between each course, the Rebbe would sing a song and say a Dvar Torah. And then, after the Dvar Torah, he would say the same Torah. And this guy, the Holy Hunchback, says, I don't remember any of the Divrei Torah. But I remember he always said the exact same Torah, and this I'll never forget because it saved my life. And he said, Kindelach, sister Kindelach, my children, my sweet children, remember this, remember this. The greatest thing in the world is to do someone else a favor. The greatest thing in the world is to do someone else a favor. Gevalt. And this is Rabbeinu's greatest teaching. And the Holy Hunchback He said that there were times in the Holocaust when he just wanted to give up and mamish call it quits. His whole family was taken away. The Nazis beat him so much. He wanted to give up. And at those times of darkness when he felt so low, the Rebbe's face, this guy right there, the Rebbe's face would flash before him, and we would just see him saying, Kindala, holy Kindala, the greatest thing in the world is to do someone else a favor. Give up, give up. And so instead of getting depressed, getting down, doing worse things, he said, I have to do something good for someone else. That's the only thing that'll bring me up. And there's a lot of good things you could do in Auschwitz. So he went to all the broken people. Nobody wanted to hear them tell their story anymore about how this person had died and that person had died. And he would just listen to them. This guy would just listen to them tell their stories the whole night and bring up their spirits. And somehow the Holy Hunchback survived the Holocaust. And he was in Tel Aviv. And there were times when, again, he was so down, he was so broken. And he mamish wanted to give up. And then he'd remember this Torah. Kinderlach, zisir, kinderlach, sweet children. The greatest thing in the world is to do someone else a favor. To do someone else a favor. And he knew that the opportunity to do something good for someone else, to be a giver like Hashem is a giver, that's the only thing that's going to keep him going. So he would go to a bar, and when he'd listen to people as they told their story of woes, and that's the only thing that brought people up. And Rosh Shlomo says that when Mashiach comes, the Holy Hunchback is going to come back. He's going to sweep all the streets from Tel Aviv to Yerushalayim. And he's going to scream out before the whole world, Kinderlach, zisar, kinderlach, my children, my sweet children, the greatest thing in the world is to do someone else a favor. So if there's any Torah, and I don't know if Rabbeinu said, but in his introduction, the Rebbe says that anybody learns his Torah, he promises if you learn the Torah of the Piyashnetza, of his Torah, right, he'll swear and pray before the heavenly throne for his protection. That's what he writes in the introduction. He says, I don't know if there's any Jews alive. If you find a Jew in Yerushalayim, bring him this. Yeah, this is what Rabbeinu was saying. You bring this book to some Jew in Yerushalayim, and if you learn my Torah, like we're learning right now, he'll daven for us. So Am Yisrael needs a lot of tefillot right now. So Bezrat Hashem, the schus of us spending extra time learning a little Torah, singing a little niggun, Hashem should bring all these yeshivas down to us. And when we're broken and we don't know what to do with ourselves, we should always remember that this world is like a little hospital. And we should learn from Rabbeinu and just say, what can I do for another person? Let me just one more opportunity to do something good for another person. That's all that life's about.
I
da da da.
Share one last Torah, and then we'll sing however long until you guys want to sing. And I think I gotta head home to my wife. Just we know, like I mentioned, today's not the yard site, but it's soon after the yard site. Why are we celebrating the yard site? He died. You know, it's over. So on the one hand, we're celebrating. If the Eish Kodesh knew that we were standing, the holy fire knew that we were standing under this fire by the menorah, right? Looking at Yerushalayim, looking at the place of Har Zeitim, Tchiyat HaMetim, the dead are going to come to life, or he's going to come back to life. Looking at the Kotel, looking at Har HaBayit, that itself is worth celebrating. The Eish Kodesh said, famously, he said, when his family was broken, his family was taken away from him, and his brothers and children were killed. He said that he's defeated. He was broken. He was totally dead. But the Jewish people will never be defeated. And the Rav Weinberger says he agrees with every line in his book except for that line, because he wasn't defeated, because we're still learning his Torah, we're still teaching his lessons. So just the fact that we're still teaching his Torah is itself a success. But beyond that, on a Hasidic, on a Kabbalistic level, they say that the soul still hovers, the soul still in the world, and especially if we're coming here in Yerushalayim, the Shara Shamayim is right here, we know that His presence, His soul is really, really with us right now. It's really with us. And they say that a tzaddik in heaven, he just wants to go up to the heavenly realms and just like bask in Hashem's glory. You know, like Rav David was saying, just like hug Tati, you know? But a tzaddik doesn't do that. A tzaddik still looks back like a deer and like looks back at his children and is still davening for us and is still looking out for us. And this is the Eish Kodesh during his lifetime, right? He could have left. He could have rebuilt Judaism in Eretz Yisrael. would have been the, one of the world leaders and lived till the 70s. But he chose to stay with his flock, not because it made sense, but because that was his children, that was his flock, and he couldn't leave. And he helped try to make the Warsaw Ghetto uprising. But he didn't leave us. He took the beatings for the sake of the Jewish people. Shlomo, we'll just finish off this story. Shlomo tells a story. I always tell it to my barber when I'm getting a haircut, to Shimon. It's a good story, though, even if you're not for a barber. But you can tell it to your barber. I like it. So the Chozel Melublin. So the Chayze, he was so holy that not anybody could just cut off his hair. And whenever the Chozel was about to cut off his hair, the rabbis would make a big proclamation and say, "Everybody, barbers, do tshuva, go to the mikvah, because the Chozel needs a haircut." And if you were not holy enough to cut the Chozel's hair, the Chozel would scream and say, "Oh, it hurts so much." And if you weren't on the level. So all the barbers would do tshuva. And one year in particular, they just didn't do tshuva enough. Because every barber would just walk in there, and Mamish, he was just screaming. It hurt so much. And the gabbers are like, "Oh, what are we going to do? He's going to be a hippie rabbi. They're going to make fun of him. What do we do?" So they're walking around, and suddenly they see this little barber. Doesn't really look like a chassid exactly. You know, it's got like chill vibes. You know, looks like a kind of nachlaot dude. And big guy. He says, "I'm a barber and a little bit of a doctor." And they "All right, we'll try." And we used up all the rest of the barbers. "You want to cut the hair of the Chozel?" He says, "All right." He gets in there. "I'll cut anybody. I'll cut a rabbi, whatever." And he cuts his hair. And the Chozel is like, "Ah, so good. Amazing. Gewalt. What a barber." So after that, they take the barber, the holy barber, they take him out to the tavern. They say, "Rabbi, tell us your story. You're so holy that the Chozel felt it. What's your deal?" He says, "I don't want to talk about it. I'm nothing special. I'm just a simple yid." So he has a couple of chayims, a couple more chayims. He doesn't really want to talk about himself, but finally, they ask him enough, and he says, "All right, you want to know the secret?" Takes off his shirt, and he shows he's beaten all over. Mamish, red, disgusting marks. He says, "I'll tell you the story. You see, I go around from town to town giving haircuts, and I see that in this little town, they're beating everyone. Everyone's looking around, beating this Jew. So what happened? There had been a theft. And what happens when there's a thief? You need to find the thief, but they didn't have a thief, so who do they blame? The Jew. So the first Jew they could find, they're beating him. And this guy, the barber, sees that he's not going to make it. They're beating him. He's going to die. He's a skinny little guy. And he says to himself, "I'm a big guy. I can withstand it. And even if I can't, I don't have a family. This guy has a family, children. They're looking at him. He's going to die. I'm going to take one for the team." And so he gets in there. And he says, "I did it. I stole it." And they start beating him. 1, 2. At 10, he realizes it. They're beating him so hard. He's not going to make it. He's going to die. He looks up to Hashem and says, "Hashem, you know I'm not doing this for me. You know I'm just doing this for the sake of the Jewish people. You know I'm just doing this for you, Hashem. Please help me. Please save me." And somehow, he faints at 100. Somehow, he survives. And that's how he was holy enough to cut the hair of the Chozel Melublin, and the Chassidim understood. And what they understood was that while we need the Chozel, we need the Mesiris Nefesh of learning Torah, the spirituality, the tests, we need that. Am Yisrael Mamash needs that. We also need those Yidden who are willing to take one for the team, those Yidden like the Eish Kodesh, right? Who are willing to be beaten for the sake of the Jewish people, like the Chayalim, right? No matter how much Torah they learn, they're Mamash like the barber. They're really like, you know, when you put on those Madim, you're saying Klal Yisrael is first, the Jewish people are first. And all of us, in our own little way, we can try to think there might be a moment in our life when we'll just remember this story and remember, not that we should be beaten, chas v'shalom, but that just remember that we need the Chozel, but we also need the barber, we need the Mesiris Nefesh, and maybe we could just draw from a little bit of the Gvura of the Eish Kodesh, of our holy Chayalim, who are protecting us, and that's Chut Hashem should send endless simcha and love down to the Jewish people. Na 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 na.